And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Interfered here and declare your independence from me, Ernest Hancock, here in Tonopah, Arizona. Yeah, we did the show last night with, had a good signal. We did the video, and I was like, looky, we're negotiating for some land. So it's going to be, to wake up to this every day and sunsets up. Kind of not to leave me aloneism, that'd be awesome. They're not leaving us alone. This is the goal. That was the whole point. Thou shalt leave me alone. I got the Bill of Rights of thou shalt leave me alone. Thou shalt not. Well, today's show, we're going to have an interesting get caught up on a bunch of stuff. In the third hour, of course, Frank Tamburi, our five-year Trump report, and we're going to call it what? The post-Trump report? The Biden report? No. We're going to call it something else. I don't know. We're still getting names coming in. We'll see what we're going to do. But Frank's going to have something to say about something. But I'm kind of done with, politics. I'm so not interested. But, it's not like they're done with us. In the second hour, Jacob Hornberger from the Future of Freedom Foundation. Jacob's a good friend. He ran for the Libertarian nomination. He didn't get it. And I was very disappointed. We would have had a totally different election cycle had he been the Libertarian nominee. And then, Joe Jurgensen got in there, and she just, first thing is she's a Black Lives Matter activist doing, which is not real. This whole catering to the left, where did that come from? There's something else going on, certainly in the Libertarian circle. We'll discuss that. He's going to be all diplomatic and everything. I don't know, but maybe we'll get something out of him, And then the first hour, we got a new friend, Charlie Robinson. Charlie Robinson, he's, highly recommended through other people, and he's part of the Union of the Unwanted that Ricky does over at Ripple Podcast and Ripple Effect. And it's been interesting of all the people out there, influencers that are banned. They have a bent to them. It's kind of that freedom thing. You're so freaking not allowed. Well, he's the author of The Octopus of Global Control, as well as The Controlled Demolition of the American Empire, with the co-author, Jeff Berwick. Now, we know Jeff, and he knows Jeff, and anybody knows Jeff. Okay, so he also has a audio-video podcast, this is what we're going to start off with, Microaggressions with Charlie Robinson.
Macroaggressions.
Oh, macroaggressions. Macro. Oh, thank you, God.
It's a play on, the term microaggressions. Like, as an example, Ernie, you just committed a microaggression against me.
Of course.
So that
did.
Means I need to go get the administrator of my school involved and get you fired for that. So
okay.
I decided that, when I do my podcast is going to be targeted at those morons, so I'm going to have some fun with them. So I'm going to call it macro. You think you're triggered now? Wait till you hear my show.
Thank you. Yeah, we're going to hear. Okay, macroaggressions. Thank you. The show contains interviews with people that see the world from a different perspective than traditional left-right political paradigm, and it challenges established belief systems by showing that most of what we see on our televisions are carefully created lies to hide what is actually happening. So, yeah, there's a macro aggression from the state. So this is – thank you. God, man, I was like, are we going to be talking about this? Seriously. All right. So that's a lot better. Real quick, pimp your book, you know, with Jeff, and tell us about that real quick, and then we'll talk about your show, and then we'll censor – we got plenty to talk about. All right, go, man.
Well, Jeff Berwick and I started talking about writing this book in the summer of 2018. I was on Anarchast. I was promoting my first book, The Octopus of Global Control. We got done talking for the show, and we were still chatting on Zoom, and he said something interesting to me. He said, you know, it's all coming down, man. And I was like, well, elaborate. And he's like, you know, the banking system's a house of cards, and the stability that we think we see, it's an illusion, and it's all coming down. And I was like, yeah, you know, it is. You're right. And then he said, look, we should write a book. We should work on something together. I said, I'd really like that. That'd be great. Let's figure it out. So I wound up in Costa Rica. I had some time to think about this book. And what stuck in my head was when Jeff was talking about it's all coming down. So to me, I'm thinking like a controlled demolition. And when I think controlled demolition, of course, think Building 7, which is why we use that as the imagery on the cover of the book, with the Building 7 wrapped in the American flag and coming down in a pile of debris. Mm. And from that point, I wrote out the framework of it. I said, you know, Jeff, what if we compared the way you take down an actual building, like identifying the support columns and rigging the detonators and, you know, ringing the alarm bells and pushing down the plumbers? What if we took the way you do an actual building and we compared it to the way you would take down an empire, how you would do things like pre-weaken the building, right, which is, you know, NAFTA and policies that take like a, it's like lighting a 25-year fuse on something. You know, it kind of helps to hollow out the insides of the country or the insides of a building in advance before you actually take it down. So that was the concept of it. We put it all together. It took about, you know, we were working on it for about 2 years. I really wanted to get it out at Anarchapulco 2020 when I was there speaking, and I thought, Jeff, this is going to be a perfect time. We got everybody here. But he wasn't done. You know, he wasn't done with his part. So it didn't happen then. And I was a little disappointed because I thought the timing was going to be good. And about 3 weeks after I left in Anarchapulco, we had the Corona situation happen. And we both said, oh, we should hang on the book and see how this plays out for a little bit. So we did. We let 2020 roll out the way it did. And, you know, in about August, I said, I've seen enough, Jeff. How about you? And he's like, yeah, me too. So we finished it up, released the book on the Friday before Election Day. Mm. And on Election Tuesday, the book was the number one bestseller on Amazon. So we found it ironic that, you know, if you read the book, you'll never vote for these morons again in your life. And the fact that it became number one on Election Day was somehow perfect. So my frustration about the whole thing had been the timing. And in the end, our timing worked out perfect.
It's always timing. And you get older, you're just kind of more patient and you can, yeah, I see where this is going. Well, I think I'll say this about that. Oh, you're so out of the mainstream and you're not, and you're part of the Union of the Unwanted. And I'm going, yeah, right up until you are, you know. So what do you think is in your book, the demolition, the controlled demolition? You know, fill that meat out a little bit on that, where you were saying that you have the hollowing out, the weakening of the structures. We'll talk about which structures. And then the catalyst event. You know, there's always stuff. You got to have flames, you know. You got to have, you know, you got, woohoo, right, everybody look. And then that's when the money stealing starts, you know. So what? We're going into break here in about a minute. So go ahead and real quick kind of describe what we're going to talk about when we come back. Get everybody on the edge of their seat, what they want to know about the hollowing out.
Yeah, so it started with a rotten foundation, as most things do. And Jeff and I start talking about, we go into depth about the previous empires that have come and gone. They follow a very predictable pattern. You know, it's a very cyclical pattern where you start to see, you know, bread and circuses and overextending your military like the Romans did, and coin clipping, how they clipped all the edges of the coins and melted them down into another coin, so they were debasing their currency. And we started to see these patterns forming. It's like, wow, we're at the last stage of this. And
most the last day.
Rhodes, it's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
We don't need no stinking roads. All right. Who'll build the roads? Damn it. That's what we always get. You know, Charlie Robinson, if he had a road that he had to build on his property, I guess he'd probably do it. You know, I'm looking at building some roads where we are anyway. This is going to be an interesting year. And the controlled demolition of the American Empire is it's obvious. And it was one thing that I always say, you know, it won't happen all at once, but it will happen overnight. And a lot of people, they just, what the hell are you talking about? I'm going, look, you're going to see it. I mean, it's like the breaking dawn, man. I mean, it's so obvious, you know, at least what, you know, I think the lights are over there, you know. I think this is going to pop around. Boom, there it is, you know. And it's always, and it's Monday, you know. So when this happens, it happens in big, giant fits and starts. Why do you think it goes from, you know, nothing to, you know, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 in Bitcoin kind of thing? And it's to have someone of like mind with another person of like mind sit there and go, okay, what are we looking at? You know, what would precede the collapse, the takeover, the, you know, the Harris administration? So, you know, they thought about it, wrote about it, and I'd really like to hear what are the details of the hollowing out, the weakening, the getting ready to pull the trigger. You know, go ahead and detail some of that for us, will you, please, Charlie?
Sure. Well, so it starts with a rotten foundation. You move to the pre-weakening of the building. So in a real control.
Okay, wait. You said foundation. Building. I want to go what foundation you're talking about. Yeah. So what's the foundation of sand that we're on?
Yeah. So the rotten foundation is, you know, is the, well, first of all, it has to do with it. We first talk about empires and how empires follow this cycle. And we believe that we built this great nation of ours on this very solid foundation. But what you find out, if you look at it closely, is what Jeff Berwick was saying to me, is that it is a house of cards. It's not as stable as you think. And it's evidenced by what we've seen lately, which is, like you said, the acceleration of everything. You know, Bitcoin jumping to 40,000 so quick. Why is that? Is that because of Bitcoin, or is that more of a indictment on the way the current system is set up? And so we started with the foundation. We talked about, you know, just the corrupt systems that are built, the very questionable Freemasonic beginnings of Washington, D.C., and sort of that history of it. We then move on to pre-weakening of the building. Now, when you're taking a real building down, you identify the support columns, and then you go and find other minor support areas and cut them in advance. Not enough to take the whole building down, but just enough so that you don't have to use all of your dynamite on that. So in our comparison, pre-weakening of the building are things like the policies that you put into place that have no other no other function than to just gut society. So you're talking about things like NAFTA, where you're exporting all of the manufacturing jobs out of America, and that's like, you know, that doesn't hit you all at once, but after 25 years of that, like where we are now, you start to see there's no middle class. There's the Rust Belt is decimated, things like that. You then implement other policies like the concept of private prisons. The private prison industry should never exist.
Yeah.
And that is something that is so devious and so baked into the equation. Once again, another Clinton situation in conjunction with the first Bush. They put these policies in place. They create these industries that destroy society. They make it just very difficult for any sort of social cohesion in the black community, especially with these, you know, with Clinton's omnibus crime bill, and it was written in conjunction with Joe Biden, that targeted the black community and put them away on disproportionately long prison sentences for rock cocaine versus powdered cocaine, and all of these little tactics that they use. These things matter. The rise of China, you know, our importing of our manufacturing was a true two-pronged thing. It simultaneously destroyed us while building China up. So we have to deal with supply chain issues with China. So we put ourselves in a really unusual situation where we're not quite as self-sufficient as we would like to believe.
Okay,
we're very
who
dependent
did?
On other countries, especially for our supply chain.
When you say we
saw that with just toilet paper last year.
When you say we put ourselves in and kind of, you know, is it, you know, I mean, it keeps getting down to a smaller and smaller number of people or organization or something. Who did? You know, we get NAFTA. We get, you know, these different trade things. And I started in the late 80s with the Uruguay round of the GATT Treaty. That's what became me being an activist. My father's company and so on. The Omnibus Trade Competitiveness Act of 88. And I'm going, whoa. I know fascism. I took junior high, you know. I mean, I get it. You mix government and business to the point you can't tell the difference. You know, that's fascism. This is what they're doing. So this is when you say they, you know, I always get that, you know, or you say we, you know, don't put me in there. But that was one thing that I got challenged the most when I first started doing radio. They, you freaking conspiracy tinfoil hatter. You know, who the hell are they? And I go, you want to know who they are? I tell you who they are. They're those that just want to be left alone and those that won't leave them alone. And they're not leaving me alone. That's who they, them, those are. You know, so that's where you hear they, them, those a lot. So my thing is that they, who are they? They use these mechanisms to do this stuff to hollow us out. Do you got to beat on who they might be? Or is it us? I mean, what? Help me there.
Well, we could call them the globalists. We could call them the New World Order. Well, they call themselves the New World Order. I know that most people get an eye roll when you mention the term New World Order, and they say, "Get out of here, you conspiracy theorist!" And you're like, "Hang on a second, not my terminology for them. I can show you." You know, George H.W. Bush referred to the New World Order over 200 times just during his 4 years in office. It's a very real thing. If people want to make it a little bit more real, you could say, look at the World Economic Forum, get a group photo of those people. That's a good start on who they are.
I know, it's not all of them,
but we could talk multi-generational banking families, you know, the people that are really pulling the strings here. That's the big they out there. And one of the things that they do is they when we got to the chapter called Identifying the Support Columns, these are the things that need to be destroyed. So you talk about things like critical thinking. That needs to be destroyed. I would say mission accomplished in the United States after 2020, taking a look at where we are. I don't think it's debatable anymore. Our critical thinking for the most part, for the majority of Americans, maybe even worldwide, has been decimated. I mean, they're unable to function. They're now having actual debates about whether or not they should wear two masks or three masks and things like and do I get
we went from two masks to three masks in about 3 days. That was two masks. Are you kidding? No, three masks. I'm like, oh my goodness. It's like, I was comparing it to a Saturday Night Live skit where they were back in the 80s. They were going, you know, like you had how many razors, you know, blades there were. Oh, it's a two track, three track.
Right.
They came out
and
they go, five track razor, be funny. And then they actually did it later, you know? So I'm, wow, three masks, you know, that didn't take long. All right, we're coming back with Charlie Robinson, and we're getting into the meat, whether the support columns have to be taken out. Have they taken them out? Then what? Once you get it, you know, what three-year-old or bull in the China shop do you bring in to just kind of knock it over, you know, and then why? And to build what? Or to not build? To take out the support?
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800.
Welcome back, Charlie Robinson. Yeah, the pillars, the columns, the foundation you got, and the foundation of, I didn't know what the foundation was. For me, it was the Declaration of Independence. This is the deal. I mean, you know, people, you know, declared and died and bled, and it starts there. And then they go, yeah, but the Articles of Confederation, it wasn't central power enough of taxing authority of we get to have a royalty class of something. So here goes Hamilton and the boys. And the group that did the Declaration and the Constitution, not the same guys. I don't even know if there was even any overlap at all. So a decade later, they come in and say, we're going to rule you this way. And they go, really? Well, you want to have another revolution? Okay, we'll do that Bill of Rights thing. You know, we'll amend it to say all these, the 10 thou shalt nots of government. So that was the foundation. But what was the foundation? You had, you know, legislative, judicial, and executive branch creating free speech zones, and the Constitution, the Supreme Court goes, oh, okay, yeah, that's good. You know, so what happens when you got all three branches aligned against the rights of the individual? You find yourself in a free speech zone in the corner. That's what happens. You know, so then the government gets to decide. You know, we'll decide if we have that authority. Yeah, we did. We just checked, okay? So I have no illusion that I'm in any kind of a system that's there for me like they say it is. So I think I'll decline. But for our culture and our society and for what makes America, to the degree that we're exceptional, to the degree that we support individual liberty. And when you start taking that away, you know, yeah, you're a house of cards. So those columns that held up this culture, that made America as powerful as quickly as it did, because like Mexico, a poor country, it's not like they lack resources. You know, Canada, man, you know, hell, Siberia. I mean, you know, what's so great about America? It was the freedom to produce and to keep what you produced, life, liberty, property thing. So these columns are what we're talking about. What was the most important one, you think, Charlie? They had to make sure, I don't know if they go after it first, but the one they really, really, really needed to get.
Well, you know, we felt that destroying critical thinking was the main column they needed to get, because when you destroy people's ability to really think, then it doesn't matter. You can work on all the other ones afterwards, but it's what you need to take out first. I mean, if I can't even comprehend that possibly my mainstream media news is lying to me, then I'm at a severe disadvantage trying to figure out the rest of the world. So if you can keep somebody confused, if you can keep them unable to reason and work these things out through their head, what you wind up with is the system that we have now, which is people debating how many masks I need to wear.
Yeah.
And do I need to put a mask on my dog when I walk my dog? Because this is what happens. So after that, you know, you can do whatever you need to do. If once you've got everyone either dumbed down or, you know, hooked on television, it's the bread and circuses component of this. That works really well. But then the next thing you would do is you would destroy the education system. And once again, I think mission accomplished. I mean, they took what we had 2 decades ago was bad enough. Then the introduction of Bill Gates and his Common Core curriculum into this, and it's by all accounts an unmitigated disaster. And the way they put that structure in place with the federal funding that Obama was handing out, telling the states, look, if you want this funding, you have to sign on to this Common Core program. States are going, okay, well, what's the curriculum? Tell us what it is. And they said, well, it hasn't been developed yet. And they said, well, how can we sign on to it if we don't know what we're signing on to? And he said, listen, do you want the money or not? So, of course, they need it. The schools sign on. They say, fine. How bad can it be? I hope it's not bad. And then they see it, and it's a disaster. And they say, we don't want to participate in this. The federal government says, you took the money, so you're participating in it. So it's an orchestrated attempt to destroy. Not, I mean, they already destroyed the critical thinking of the adults, but now they're doing what the Nazis talked about, which is give me control of the textbooks, and I've got control of the country in a generation. So when you control the kids and you put them through the Common Core school system, you can't act surprised when they come out of that unable to count, because in their literature, they talk about how in the math component, they're not even really so much concerned about the final answer. They're really more interested in the process. So if you say 3 times 4 equals 11, as long as you're able to show your work, how you get to the wrong answer, you'll still get partial credit. If you just write 3 times 4 equals 12 because you've memorized it and you know what that is, you'll get dinged on it because you're not showing all the steps. So if you're a kid, school's tough enough. You go through that school that math program of Common Core, what was happening is that the kids were coming home crying, telling their parents, I don't understand math, I'm stupid, I don't want to go back to school. So how do you quantify that, Ernie? How do you quantify the damage that's been done to an entire generation of kids? Not throw on top of that remote learning and this forced bubbles and the masking and I mean, it's a psychological operation, and it's very damaging for kids, and we don't even know what the ramifications of this will be, because in order to really fully understand it, we're going to need to see how these kids turn out. So it's damaging to us, and we identified that as a real thing. Destroy critical thinking and then go after the education system. And boy, they have done that over the last 20 years with aggression.
To what end? You know, we destroy it. It's one of the foundational pillars of they can't even comprehend an answer. You know, imagination has been stripped. You know, oh, no, you got to, we can't even imagine. Because that's one thing that humanity is really good at, is just by, you know, humanity inspires other people by just thinking or dreaming, or science fiction writers, or just, you know, because I grew up on Star Trek, and man, hell, we probably do have transporters and warp drive, and we're sure as hell getting close. Hell, we got I thought one of the things they'd never do, you know, subspace communication. We got quantum entanglement now. It's instant talking to somebody on Pluto. I mean, you know, it's if we can imagine it, it happens. So they want to. I could see in the 90s they were stripping us of our imagination. You would go to the supermarket and you would have a science fiction section of magazines and books and so on. You go into Blockbuster Video, there would be a section, science fiction. Then it's kind of morphed away or got put into action horror or something like that. It was intentionally being carved out. And it was brought to my attention by a science fiction writer, L. Neil Smith, a prominent libertarian that, you know, had a lot of, you know, like 30 books or something he's written. And he goes, look, man, they're carving this out intentionally. And I'm going, you're right. They are. Just the imagination, the ability to think there could be something else, which is what the book 1984 was about. They're like, look, they won't even have the vocabulary to express what they think a problem is. They won't even have the words for it. So, you know, that's what Newspeak was all about. So this is, it's intentional. It was directed, and it was long-term. And I could recognize it in the early 90s. We pulled our kids out of school, best thing we ever did. But what are some of the other foundational? They get you the critical thinking in the media. They get the adults and, you know, with incentives and punishments and think this way, or we're going to get Karen the rat on you and lawn Nazis. And then you have the education system. Is there some other component of the people's mental acuity to be able to discern we should do something about something? You know, there's some other avenue there.
Yeah. Well, they destroy your concept of what is truth, you know, through the mainstream media as well. They destabilize you into believing a story that is sent out through the mainstream corporate press to tell you about a version of reality, which is not actual reality, but it's a coordinated attempt to shape reality. That's why
the scientists. The scientists say.
You got it. Yep, you got it. And what happened? You know, and if you think about it, if you go back and if you have a long time, if you have a long plan for this, and I think, and Jeff and I believe that these global maniacs have a long term plan, you can do things like destroy the education system through bringing in Common Core. But if you have a short term plan, someone like Pol Pot with the Khmer Rouge, what you do instead, when he came to power, the first people that he targeted were the doctors, the scientists, and the teachers, and the educated. So
why? Here we go.
Freedom is the answer. What's the question?
I want to break free.
You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
I want to break free.
Uncovering the secrets and exposing lies. That's what we do here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock. You don't need to do it with me. Everybody's like, I gotta declare my independence with you? What kind of crap is that? I'm going, you know, that's a good point. You just go, I declare my independence. See how easy it was? No government form. No government form. So, all the government forms have been going around, and all the things that, you know, they're doing, and there's a reason, there's a purpose, there's a goal, you know. And Charlie Robinson, The Controlled Demolition of the American Empire, they co-authored with Jeff Berwick, they were examining this, and it just came out this last summer into the summer because they're going, I'm feeling now's the time. And then, of course, here it happens. So you're continuing your description of this. How I forgot where we left off. Do you remember?
Yeah. Well, after you identify the support columns on a building like this, the next thing you do is you rig the detonators. And what that means is this is how they're going to do it. How are they going to take this place down? They're going to create false flag events, never-ending wars. They'll divide the public into smaller and smaller groups, and then they'll inflate away the currency through central banking. So these are policies that have been put in place, or at least behaviors that the government has instituted that are very aggressive and psychotic, that are not meant to end well. The false flag components, we've seen that for years and years. The government is heavily engaged in that. I know that sounds conspiratorial to some people, and of course it is, but it doesn't mean it isn't true. So you dig into the history of that and the government's involvement with events like 9/11 and you know, other, then you find that, you know, if you really want to keep, if you want to destabilize this population and get them turning on each other, the best way to do that is to divide them into smaller and smaller groups, be that Republican and Democrat or rich and poor or black and white or masked or no masked or whatever. If there's an angle, they're going to seek to try and divide you into smaller groups. And that of course, is just a tactic that you would use if you were a small group of people trying to control a large group of people. You would try to divide them into smaller and smaller groups. Otherwise, you're outnumbered. So we see this happening. It's ramping up, obviously, under Trump. I mean, that was the divider in chief. I mean, he got people not just divided, but he got them really angry. So we analyzed that and you know, really got into the never-ending wars that do multiple things. You know, they deplete our resources while ruining our reputation and spreading chaos throughout throughout the world.
Well, Trump didn't start a big giant "Oh my God" new war. You know, I give him that. You know, but we've been doing the Trump report for every week since he went down the escalator. I had a good friend that was a Ron Paul Republican doctor guy, and he's like, "Oh, I want to come on and talk about Trump." I'm like, "Yeah, you're still voting." I mean, that's been my, no matter what he said, I'm like, "You're still voting." So it my concern. I think Trump was a side effect of something. People wanted or supported. They thought they, I don't know what the heck, he didn't give it, but I was very critical of him having the opportunity as president of the United States of America that he didn't attack central banking. You know, we got, there's so much that could have been done that wasn't done. And I'm going, from your perspective, all this Q stuff, all the Trump stuff, all of the hope and real change of orange man, bad, whatever the hell, what was it that you think people supported? What were they looking for and what did they get?
Well, he's a disruptive force, and that can be a good thing or a bad thing. I think in Washington, I liked the idea of a bull in a china shop in Washington, D.C. I liked when Newt Gingrich said Donald Trump was going to have a hard time in this town because he's not part of the secret societies. It's the one, you know, one of the few things, one of the few times I ever heard Newt Gingrich tell the truth on camera, and he was right. And so I liked that. And I think a lot of people liked, you know, when he was campaigning and Hillary Clinton, he said, you know, or you'd be in jail. I think that won him the election with that line. You know, he knew how to deliver a punch. He harnessed like the anger and frustration that a lot of people were feeling through the Barack Obama era and really even George W. Bush, which was these policies that are put in place. They don't seem to benefit us. You know, like why are we giving all this money to Israel or Pakistan or wherever? Every year we're giving all this money away. And yet we still haven't fixed the problem with Flint's water. And Obama goes up there and pretends to drink water and everyone sees through that. They go, you know what, this is disrespectful, and we don't like this. When Trump says, "I'm going to make America great again," people said, "You know what? I'm on board with that. I don't know what that means,
right,
but I'm on board with prioritizing us first." And there's nothing wrong with that inherently. But, you know, you can the globalists don't like that. You know, they don't like that idea at all. They want America destabilized. If the American empire is destabilized and taken down, their plan for a one world government becomes exponentially more easier for them to attain, because you can't have a one world government when you have superpowers standing in the way. Soviet Union was targeted three
decades
ago.
You know, the superpower of America was its super individualism of support of and rights and free people, middle class. So that's a superpower. You know, it's like the reason you could never take over Afghanistan is because they're not collectivized and somebody to surrender. This village and this valley and this tribe and this, you know, hey, you know, we rule you now. They can't even get a national Afghanistan soccer team. I mean, you know, I don't know, maybe they have one. Well, I think they probably made one in Kabul or something just to, out of the point. So it's all this nationalism and so on. What happens when the culture is to support individual rights? That's what they have to take down. And this is, you know, you said make America great again for 5 years. I never showed my hand for 5 years. I'm going, okay, define that for me. America, America Inc., America people, America culture, America geography, America board, America and her interest, whatever that means. You know, what the hell does that mean? And great, how big your mushroom cloud penis head is? I mean, what are you talking about? Well, they never said it. Now, Reagan would always say it. You know, what makes us a great and exceptional is our support of freedom, the individual rights, and so on. They couldn't say it because they didn't mean it. They didn't even understand it. They didn't even know that was a thing. So all this time, I'm going, well, say it. Say it. What does it mean? Well, it means whatever, like you just said. You know, America first. You know, America great again. America, America. You know, I want to wear the jersey. And it got to where they had to attack that. Even that concept, you know, so then here comes all the kneeling and I don't like the pledge and flag and whatever. And that was never what it was about. The first activism I ever did, the first expression was when it all the American flag thing, the 88 election cycle. I'm a young man. And finally, I just took my kid crayons and made American flag with flames on the bottom and wrote, burn the symbol, see the meaning. And I just put it in my wallet. So anybody come up, they always bring this out. I just pull it out, show it, put it back in my wallet. You know, I got so sick of this. They didn't understand what was really going on. So now we got all these false flags to what? They're doing this stuff to what? What's the end game? They're pulling the trigger to what, Charlie?
Well, they want to the next chapter that we have is ringing the alarm bells. This is what to look for before it blows up. You know, you find a war on whistleblowers. We've got that.
Yeah.
Wealth inequality. We've got that. I mean, the average CEO makes in some cases, they used to make 20 times the average worker's salary. Now that in some cases, 1,000 times. And that creates a two-tiered system. It creates, we have a two-tiered system of justice. That's, you know, for sure. And this is what, these are the things that you look for right before the empire comes down. And then, and the two final chapters are pushing the plunger down and clearing the debris. Well, pushing the plunger down, they always use the invisible enemy they're using the invisible enemy to do that. It's been terrorism, and now it's switched over to a virus. And, but Jeff and I wrap this thing up in a fairly positive note, which is to say that some aspects of the American empire need to go away. And it's not to say that America itself goes away. It's just that the empire does. Our 1,000 military bases, our control of the petrodollar, our control of the SWIFT banking system, and all these things that we have right now, they can go away. And it will leave us in a situation like the Soviet Union, where we lost all of the satellite countries. They protected Mother Russia and prioritized that. And I think in the end, the American empire will go away. America will remain kind of a shell of itself, but that's
Texas.
That's Texas.
Yeah, we did. In 1994, I filed an initiative in the state of Arizona to piss them off, and it was Arizona's Declaration of Independence. All I did was change the crown or the king, to the state of Arizona, and these colonies to Arizona, and I mean the federal government and to Arizona, and it all applied. I do that now. I go to Guantanamo.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Yeah, and a feared here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, here in Tonopah, Arizona, west of Phoenix by an hour, out in the middle of the desert. This is going to be something I've been wanting to do for a long time. Last year, talking with Jacob Hornberger from the Future of Freedom Foundation. The last we talked was during his effort to run for the presidential nomination for the Libertarian Party, which I was very supportive of, sat there and did their virtual convention, you know, in front of a computer with, you know, a bunch of other friends from Arizona doing the same thing, going through this process. Now, in the beginning, Jacob did not sully himself in, you know, any of his campaign efforts, and he, you know, made the big effort, and all of a sudden the machine, you know, came in, and I think Jacob was one of the favorites, and they're like, no, can't have a real libertarian being a Libertarian Party candidate. That wouldn't go with their plan. And I kind of anticipated this, and I, with all the things that are going on, I don't know how much time we want to spend on, but I can't not talk about it, Jacob. I just want to make sure that we get your experience and that you, whatever you want to share, you share with us, that we get to know on the inside, and then is there going to be a political solution going into the future of, was that our last chance of whatever? So Jacob Hornberger, president of the Future of Freedom Foundation, has been going around since forever, and he's been a big influence on so many of us that were young activists coming up and needing words to articulate it. He's a founder and president of Future of Freedom Foundation. He was born and raised in Laredo, Texas, received his BA in economics from Virginia Military Institute, and his law degree from the University of Texas. He was a trial attorney for 12 years in Texas. He also was an adjunct professor at the University of Dallas, where he taught law and economics. In 1997, Jacob left the practice of law to become director of programs at the Foundation for Economic Education, FEE. He has advanced freedom and free markets on talk radio stations all across the country, as well as on Fox News, Neil Cavuto, goes a long list of everything he's appeared on. And a lot of his stuff you can find over at Lou Rockwell. And we have links to all his stuff and goodies in the show archive. Let's get to Jacob. Jacob, you know, take that, and in the next 5-6 minutes that we got, you know, sum up your experience, you know, with the libertarian effort and presidential campaign and what happened, and then we'll get into some real important stuff.
Well, I think you summarized it pretty well. I mean, when I jumped in the race, it was with the idea of presenting a candidacy that was based totally on libertarian principles. And, you know, that's what I've done at FFF for 30 years. And I figured, look, we've had 20 years of these Republican-esque campaigns, and let's run a bold campaign. And bold, I meant by a pure libertarian campaign, by hitting hard right out the chute with Social Security repeal, Medicare repeal, open borders. And, man, this just shocked the reform-oriented, conservative-oriented segment of the party, which is a dominant portion of this party. And I knew what I was up against from the very beginning. I mean, I knew that Amash was going to come into the race. When I first announced, I said, look, you know, at some point, this is going to be a race against the reform-oriented conservatives in the movement. And so we were doing really well in the beginning. We were winning straw polls. We were winning primaries. It's really gratifying and amazing. And around March or so, I thought, where is this force that I knew was in this party? Because I know it's in the movement too. You know it's in the movement.
Yep.
They just want reform. That's all they want. Social Security privatization, health savings accounts.
No, they want to maintain the existence of the programs. They're part of the program. It's the, I'll say it right up front. It's the coctopus. They use liberty and influence and votes and support and youth as a block of influence that they grab the handle with, and they be kingmakers for congressional races on both sides. We're just a tool. And as someone that's an activist sitting there, I'm going, I see what they're doing. It's obvious. They are supporting their interests using freedom as their influence block to do whatever the hell it is they want to do. It has nothing to do with that. And when you came in to represent, okay, let's try this libertarian thing. Let's go ahead and define for the people, them to understand, to get the critical thinking skills they need to understand what the proper role of government is, where it went off the rails, and how principally we got to make the argument for freedom. Hell no. Those want to make, and at the last minute, they bring in a former national chair, money, the machine. They know how it works, or the precinct of we gotten delegate of the whatever the hell. And I warned, you know, the audience this would happen to Jacob. I'm going, this is, I know this machine, and sure as hell if they didn't do it. And to the point that they even brought in Justin Amash, a Republican congressman, if they're just to play with it, you know. And I'm just, so, are you done with politics? You gonna do it again? You think that's a solution, or are you going, what are you thinking?
No, I'm not done with politics. But what I'd like to do is to try to move this party and this movement in a libertarian direction. You know, we talk a lot in terms of getting Americans to come over to the libertarian side. Well, you know, the first thing we have to do is get libertarians to come over to the libertarian side. And these reform-oriented people are not advancing freedom. They say they're advancing freedom, but they're really advancing a reformed or improved kind of serfdom. Just, you know, the analogy I use is slavery. Suppose people in the 19th century were advocating shorter work hours, better health conditions, better food for the slaves, fewer lashings. Well, the slaves would be very happy with that. But it wouldn't be freedom. And that's what these reform people within this party and this movement are doing. They're trying to improve the serfdom under which we live, but they're not advocating freedom.
They're saying that. I'm telling you.
Of course.
That is, you know, they're trying to convince us and strip our critical thinking skills away for us to think, well, a little slavery is better than a lot, you know, or something. No, hell no. That's not what, no. But they keep doing that, and they try to convince everybody that it's not only in their best interest, but that's what everybody wants. Well, no, it's not. And when you get a campaign like yours, that was a deciding moment for me. I'm like, look, we have a chance. Before this all happens, at least the people get an education of what libertarianism really means. And now you say libertarian, what the hell do you mean? It used to be that it was libertarian, and then it was your local libertarian guy, and then maybe they go, oh, Ron Paul, like that. And now, you know, generations have been, what the hell does libertarian mean to anybody out there in hinterland, what they think it means? What does it mean, Jacob?
Well, you know, I think we started something, though. When I started speaking at these conventions, and I started speaking the year before I ran, I just started going to state conventions to get a feel for the land and asking them, can I give a 10-minute talk? And virtually all of them said yes, but I could see the looks on all these young people's faces. They had never heard this purist case for liberty. They had heard the case for vouchers and health savings accounts and border controls and Social Security privatization. They were shocked, absolutely shocked. But I can tell that I inspired a lot of them to do some real critical self-examination and thinking about what liberty really is. So I'm hoping that my race inspires some people to say, hey, we need to get this party and really this movement on the right way.
Yeah, and then they get banned. We're going to talk more. Jacob Hornberger, when we come back.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800, 602-264-2800, and now, Ernest Hancock.
with Jacob Hornberger from the Future of Freedom Foundation, which is FFF.org. Yes, there's a big inspiration for a lot of people, and I think they, them, those could see what was going to happen with the Jacob Hornberger campaign, where you had support of, you know, the Mises group of influencers that were on the sidelines there, you know, Tom Woods crowd with Bob Murphy and Stephen Kinsella and, you know, Lou Rockwell, Ron Paul kind of wing of. And if that got into the Libertarian Party and representing libertarianism, they're like, hell no. They put us back on the back burner with the Ron Paul thing before we kind of know we rule with a compromising reform of a little bit of socialism. And I'm like, wow, this is so I'm, you know, I've been doing this political thing for 30 years, Jacob. I'm telling you, I'm not seeing it's going to be general public opinion. And I use the political process while people are paying attention to emphasize the philosophy and the solutions or whatever. And, you know, just cut the strings, man. I mean, you know, and we're done. It didn't work. Just quit playing with it. You're just in debt and grandchildren more and more and more and more. And so the solution going into the future, of course, is how many minds you can free, which you're doing a good job at. And this would have been a great opportunity. So now what? Are you going to build up towards another run? Is it you're going to vote harder? I mean, you know, what are you thinking?
No, all my efforts right now are being devoted to, I'm getting some feedback.
Yeah, here. I gotta turn off your, yeah, we're trying to do the Zoom and it's not working. So we'll go ahead.
Okay.
All right, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm devoting all my efforts at FFF because, you know, it's not just a Libertarian Party problem. It's a movement problem. And I kept saying this during the campaign, that this is a battle for the heart and soul of this party, but also this movement. And a lot of people don't realize that there is a battle taking place within the movement and the party for the future direction. Are we going to be a reform-oriented group that stands for a conservative libertarian mush of a philosophy? Or are we going to be a libertarian movement and party that stands for libertarianism? Now, you know, the critics, the reformers will say, oh, Jacob, you're just trying to show you're more libertarian or you're more hardcore, which is ridiculous. It's their way of distracting attention from away from what they're doing. What this is about freedom. What does it mean to be free? And to be free, you have to identify what the infringements on freedom are, and you got to get rid of them. If all you do is identify them and reform them, you haven't achieved freedom. And that's what this is about. This is why this battle for the heart and soul of this movement and this party are so important. So my intent going forward here is to do that within the movement, but also within the party. I'm thinking about, I haven't finally decided, I'm starting a personal website, taking the Libertarian Party to task, saying, look what you've done to the Libertarian brand in this party. When somebody comes in, let's say a congressman comes in and supports the CIA, there's no pushback. Why isn't there any pushback? Now, you can welcome the person into the party and say, hey, we're really happy that this person comes in. How about at the same time a standard there that says we want to make it clear that his position in this area is not libertarian and is not the position of this party? Otherwise, you end up with this mush, Ernie, that nobody understands what libertarianism is. It's like, you know, I'm always laughing at national candidates that say, send me money because I need to get my message out. Why do you have to get a message out for a party that's been here for 50 years? It's because people don't know what the message is.
Okay, who are you up against? Why are you up against? Why? You know, why did Steve Dosbach come back from wherever and all of a sudden Joe Jurgensen VP for Brown back a long time ago, because they had to get the band back together, go up against Jacob. Damn it, he's going to libertarianize everybody. We got to stop that. Why? Who's them?
Yeah, the funniest part was when they said, if we nominate Jacob with this pure libertarian message, he's going to take us back to 1%.
Oh, my God. No, this argument, there's something there. They're doing this on purpose. Say it, Jacob. Say it! Say it! What are we up against? Say it!
We're just up against a reform-oriented mindset, a fearful mindset, a mindset that doesn't really have confidence in the libertarian philosophy. Social Security is a good example. I mean, that just terrified the reform-oriented crowd. Oh, my gosh, you're going to go out and call for the repeal of Social Security?
Yes.
People are going to die in the streets. That reflects a lack of faith in freedom. It's saying to the American people, freedom won't work. We have to have this socialism for the next 40 years.
Okay, I'm going to make a statement, and then I, you know, let you comment or not, and you can play, you know, diplomat on this. But I'm like, no, I think they know exactly, because I've been dealing with these guys for 20-something years, and I tell you, they are afraid of the power of pure libertarian thinking, of the way the platform was crafted in the 90s to be very clear about what it is that we're advocating. They fear it, not because they think it is not going to be popular. It's because it's too popular. It's because it works, because it drives activism, because it changes the mind and the general public opinion of the planet. And there is they, them, those, somebody that's got my, oh, no, they wouldn't take over the biggest threat that they have to this empire of new world military industrial banking complex that we rule you. They wouldn't go after the Libertarian Party. That'd be wrong. I'm like, hell, they would. That's the first place they'd come in. And it's this idea. They are afraid. It's that you keep saying they don't have confidence. And I go, the hell they don't. They're afraid of it because they got a different agenda. They're being funded for something else. That's my opinion. I'm at the little card table of the thing, and it says, convince me I'm wrong.
Well, that's one way of looking at it. I just look at it in the sense that a lot of them are conservatives. You know, the conservatives flooded into this movement, and they kept their conservative baggage to a large extent, like Social Security privatization, border control. They kept their baggage there. Health savings accounts, school vouchers, and they brought it in, and they essentially talked the Libertarian Party and the movement into, hey, adopt our position. You'll be more respectable with the mainstream press. You'll get conservative support. You can get Republicans to come over and vote for you, and in the process, they destroyed our brand. They've made our brand a mush. That's why you've got the mainstream press even referring to libertarian think tanks as conservative or conservative-oriented. You've got George Will, who's this famous conservative columnist, that celebrates when conservatives are running for office in the Libertarian Party. And he even wrote an op-ed, can this libertarian save conservatism? And it was talking about, forget the guy's name, that came over from the... One that came back and then went back to the Republican Party and got everybody upset because they felt betrayed.
Which one? Barr? I mean, you know.
No, no.
What difference does it make? They're all the same. You know,
they're all the same.
I'm saying.
But there's this revolving door between conservatives, Republicans, into the movement, out into the party, out of the party. And so you've got a large portion of the party that has adopted these conservative Republican positions and advocating them as libertarians.
Oh, more with Bumper Hornberger when we come back in just a little bit. FFF, a top word for all the good. And so many things we can talk. We'll start talking about some other stuff that he's interested in, too.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
And Jacob Hornberger, a good friend from Future of Freedom Foundation, FFF.org, a great mind, a great example of what should be. And this, we didn't have a recording to the break, but I expressed myself. So what are we up against? I mean, quit sugarcoating it, man. I mean, you're sitting there looking them in the face at all these state conventions going on now. You could see what they were doing. It is an incursion. It's been an invasion. There has been people in place, and they do and spend whatever on the cheap, you know, $10,000, $100,000, and you own the third largest party in the nation that would be the kingmaker and the influencer for an entire new generation. That's what they're afraid of. They're afraid of a Ron Paul, Donald Trump, Jesse Ventura moment. All of a sudden, everybody just went, ah, screw you, them. And they, damn it, I hate when that happens. So we got to get control of the elections and got blah, 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 blah. But what they really want is control of the general public opinion of America and the world. That's how powerful I thought Jacob would be for this election cycle. And so did they. and they wanted to make absolutely sure that did not happen, to the point that you had the Mises Caucus, which was a big supporter of yours, being deplatformed on Facebook, YouTube. I mean, what? You know, what? So, man, convince me I'm wrong that we're up against a freaking tip of a spear at the heart of libertarianism in the nation. We're not. They forgot about us. They're just leaving us alone to, you know, screw ourselves. Or is there a little help?
No, I think there's truth in what you're saying, but we're operating at two levels. One is inside the libertarian movement, and one is outside, where you've got the welfare warfare state bureaucracy, especially the Pentagon, the CIA, the NSA, that maintain this iron grip over power, and that group, the welfare warfare group, they are terrified by, because we're the only ones that challenge the legitimacy of their existence. I mean, I'm a limited government advocate. I would dismantle the whole national security state. Well, you know, in the Libertarian Party platform, they used to have that. Abolish the CIA, for example. They got that eliminated.
Yep.
Now, inside the movement, I think the reform-oriented crowd is terrified by people like us, because we make them look bad. They're over there advocating reform as liberty. We come along, and let's say we're the presidential candidate, that this is what liberty is really about. It's about eliminating infringements on liberty. What happens then when their contributors come and say, hey, wait a minute, you guys are telling the school values are liberty. This guy over here is saying liberty is educational liberty, separation of school and state. So it's their worst nightmare to have a purist highlighted in that way. They have to continue the charade within the movement and the party that reform is freedom, and it's not freedom. So what I'm saying is, I agree with you on a national level that the warfare state bureaucracy, the welfare state bureaucracy, the only threat to them is libertarianism, and they know that. The conservatives and the Republicans and the Democrats, they're no threat at all, because they believe in their system. Their fight is just over power. It is us who are saying we challenge the existence of that thing.
Thank you.
And that's why we oppose this reform nonsense.
The reform is eliminating. I mean, you know, you want reform? I gave you reform. There's no, you know, the degree of slavery. Yeah, that's not reform. Even say the word just pisses me off, you know? What's your plan, you know, going forward here? I mean, you're always in the middle of a book. And oh, one thing before the end of the break. Okay, I want to make sure we get this in. Bumper is all, Jacob Hornberger has always been a big, you know, get to the bottom of the matter, the truth of the JFK assassination. This is a big thing with him. And then we had the promise, and this is one thing I really hammered in the next hour. We're going to be doing, you know, like the last installment, or call it something else, of the Trump report. Okay. And it was, I go, he promised to eliminate, release the JFK files. Where are they? Well, they won't do it anyway. I don't give a crap whether they do it or not. I want them to issue the order. I want them to make the statement. I want them to force them to go. He pinky swore, promise, I get it. God, where is it? You know? So what's your opinion on that? We're going to get them what?
Biden's going to be owned by the national security establishment. Trump was the only chance, because he at least stood up to him to a certain extent. He finally folded for some reason. But no, the files will be kept secret when the deadline comes due again. By the way, we are having a conference, an online conference, starting on March 3rd, weekly series through April, that is going to introduce people to the whole JFK assassination, to give people the evidence, the outline of why this thing is so important, what happened, and why it happened.
Yeah,
that's one of their Achilles heels. I mean, this is the national security state. They ousted a president from office. Now, you know, the defenders say, oh, conspiracy theory, but they won't deal with the evidence. And that evidence came out, especially on the autopsy in the 1990s, after the Assassination Records Review Board forced many of those records into the public eye. And that's what blew everything to pieces about what they were doing with the fraud on autopsy. That's what the mainstream press has still not confronted, that autopsy evidence. We keep pressing and pressing and pressing, because ultimately truth is out, Ernie. They're going to have to deal with the arguments that we have shown follow logically from a fraudulent autopsy.
Okay, I agree with everything. Boom, they did it. You know, they, them, those, they, who, for what, and why, and where are we going? You know, this, I mean, to the thing that you understand, look, they will take out a president. They probably, you know, had pictures and Polaroids and showed Trump, say, you know, look at this. We did, you know, some Photoshop graphics of your whole family like they were the Czar's family or something. You know, whatever they got to do, whatever they think they can, you know, to put pressure points on, whatever. To what end? You know, is it an international, is it a bank thing? Is it, you don't understand, they don't know? Is there Dr. Evil with his pinky and a cat, you know, sitting on a volcano throne or something? You know, what are we up against?
We're up against the most powerful machine in history. It's about power and money. There's a great book called National Security and Double Government by a professor of law at Tufts University called Michael Glennon. Glennon's thesis, I believe, is right on. This is not your crackpot author. This guy has served as counsel to several Senate committees. He says the real entity in charge here is the National Security Establishment. The Pentagon, the NSA, and the CIA are running the show. They give the other three branches a veneer of power, but they are the ones in charge. They're the ones calling the shots. Trump made waves about standing up to them, and he got nowhere. Kennedy was the last president to stand up against these people and against this machine. We all know what happened to him. No president since Kennedy has dared to stand up for him. But our objective as libertarians is to get this machine dismantled and restore a limited government republic. I mean, that conversion to a national security state is the worst mistake this country ever made. Because look what we now have. We have a militarily run government.
And all it takes is general public opinion. That's why I was so supportive of your campaign. You get out there. We had, you know, the example with Dr. Paul. We have an example with you. We get out there and we say this stuff. People go, yeah, what he said or she said. I vote that. Let's do that. You know, just as an opinion. That's what they're afraid of. And that's why they get two Republican governors running, you know, Weldon Johnson sitting hip locked there, you know, stealing, taking away my rights, advocating for what the hell? So when here comes Jake, so what's going to happen? You know, we have the people in charge are more of the same. The next, you know, in 24, we got me. So I'm not wasting a freaking moment on this Libertarian Party thing, such as it is here. It's going to come from some barefoot, bald, or hippie robed spiritual awakening, enlightenment, or something. You know, I don't know where from, but it's coming because it always does. Right when it gets the darkest of the dawn, kind of thing, and it be dark. Man, woo! What's the light, Jacob? What are you working on?
Well, look at the reason that totalitarian dictatorships like in China shut down people like you and me. Here's regimes that hold total power. North Korea holds total power. Why do they care that there's people out there dissenting? What does it matter to them? Because they know the power of dissenters. They know the power of truth. Power of ideas on liberty that can sweep across the society and bring down the totality.
Yeah, bring down the regime with signs everywhere. At least that we can do that. We'll be back. More with Jacob Hornberger, FFF.org. Check it out. Buy every freaking book he's ever done. Join his site. I'm telling you, you know, this is one of
So we're roads? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
I hear we're coming back. Okay. Yeah, we're back. We were yakking it. Yeah, you know, you just talk about the bus. Because last time we talked, we were just getting ready to do this. We're getting, you know, we're finishing up and getting ready to hit the road. We hit in May. And it's been, an experience. And I'll tell you one thing, Jacob, is Don and I, we kind of went to the smaller communities and counties where some oppressive, I got a, you know, more powerful shiny badge, I'm going to make you and close your business or whatever. So the people that would say, no, we're not doing it, that's where we went. Those were the, you know, do the remotes live from the restaurant and the gym of. And as we do that, we're starting to see then everybody and their friends would come and it'd say farmers and miners and loggers and business owners and so on, tours. They come in and they say, hey, man, you know, this has been going on for a while. This is a progression down to the county level. All of these positions at a county level, all the empowerments of a shiny badge of sustainable of whatever the hell, they are going after people so that they can eliminate the middle class and entrepreneurs, close them down. You can get it with a drone from Amazon and get them off the land. That is a one major focus target. When you hear sustainable, you're hearing you're going to live in your itty bitty shoebox shipping container in the urban area next to the light rail system with everything a body needs gruel coming in, and it might as well just plug you in the back of the head. This is what it's here, and there's a big giant vacuum sucking sound of our freedom is even yet to come. This is all the fact. The previous hour we had Charlie Robinson. He's he has a show called Macro Aggression with Charlie Robinson. But he also co-authored a book with Jeff Berwick on the controlled demolition of America. And it's just the pillars of, and one of the biggest pillars that holds up our society and the free markets and so on is the idea that you own yourself. And that's what the trip is about. Do I own myself to where I can't be forced a notion and potion into my flesh from the crown? That never turns out well. Forced inoculation, forced medical treatment. Man, I'm like, did we learn anything from that? And then the other thing is, you know, if it pleases the crown, may I occupy my own land? I mean, I pitch a tent in front of the city hall. I'm good. You know, they'll clean up for me. But I take the same tent and put it on land I own without a permission slip, you know, an occupancy permit from the crown, I go to jail. When the heck that happened? You know, so it's an America thing. And that's why I was so supportive of your campaign. You are right. It is not about reform. There's no reform of the system. There's elimination of the system. Our whole purpose of government and Declaration of Independence promised me that the only role the government plays was to secure my individual rights. That's it. That's why they're there. And when they're locking you down, they're giving you curfews, they're shutting down your business, they're, you know, money to educate your kids and here, get online in this laptop we gave you to surveil your house. I'm just like, wow, at what point does the frog jump out? I'm going, and they do. This is slow boiling things, BS. Eventually the frog jumps out. I just found that out. So there's a jump and a coming. So I'm waiting, you know, for somebody to inspire me. I'll put all this effort to, you know, a Jacob Hornberger. If you got a plan to go whip some ass, man, you got a ass whipping plan, you know, sign me up. But I'm not playing anymore.
Well, you and I have been fighting for a long time alongside each other, and the thing is that even though we haven't made much progress in government power, that doesn't mean that things can't change tomorrow.
Yep.
Or even today.
Yep.
I mean, that's why I was talking about those totalitarian regimes. They're scared of people like you and me. Well, here in America, they're not jailing people like you and me, at least not yet. And so we have the opportunity that are unlike any in history to get this thing shifted in the right direction by just doing what you're doing with your bus tour, with your radio shows. You have no idea who you're influencing. None. And you just have to have the faith that you are influencing people. And if not, we're having a good time doing it anyway.
Man, what the hell? Yeah. No,
it's a labor of love.
No, I'm very convinced, as are, you know, some, you know, of course, other people that, you know, support our efforts because they're convinced. They know the impact that we're having on them or their friends or whatever. Hey, I keep doing that. And I'm like, you keep sending me money. I keep doing it. I'll even live in a little bus. Okay. I mean, plus it's pretty comfortable. You know, my commute went from down the hall in my house to down the bus to go sit in the studio. So it's not that bad. And as long as Donna's with me and we get to go see a lot, I'm really enjoying it, to be honest. It's just,
It sounds like you're having a blast.
You know, it's just that, you know, the engine problems of the bus that we thought we'd fix, we're doing. So we're dealing with that now, but you know, it's, but got the studio set up, the power situation. We're on solar. We have the inverter, charge controls, and lithium iron phosphate batteries of the whole studio. Well, man, we're good, you know. But it is, and I still need. I get more equipment because I'm always need more equipment. But the main thing is when does it flip? When does it happen? When's the 16-year-old kid that refuses to sit in the back of the bus kind of thing? Where's the one little lemonade stand that says, screw you, I'm not closing? You know, when is it? And who supports and how and why? And this social media clampdown, did you anticipate that?
Well, no. I mean, you know, every year I've said things can't get worse, and then they do.
Yep.
But you don't know when things can shift. That's the thing. But if one thing's for certain, if you give up and you end up resigning yourself to reforming the system, then you can't win.
Can't.
The only chance of winning is you got to keep fighting. And that's what you and I are doing. Now, when are things going to shift? We don't know. Nobody can
overnight.
Predict that.
Overnight. That's an overnight.
Well, if it happens, it can happen overnight. Yeah, that's
it. Always does. When does it not? I mean, it's always a tipping point. It's fine.
Yeah.
I tell you what it's like, Jacob. This is what, you know, when we were, you know, doing the bus, we get out in the desert. It's kind of springy, and, you know, here comes the flies. There's, I got me a bug assault thing, a pump action salt thing. You take out, man, it's awesome. So I'm just like, technology wins, woohoo. But I'm sitting there, I'm going, this fly is just, you know, and I share with the audience, I go, it's just like that. You're Saturday afternoon, you're, you know, watching your favorite show or game or you something, you're just relaxing, sitting there with the beer. This fly will not freaking leave you in peace. Sooner or later, you set down your beer, you get up, you go get two fly swatters and a shotgun, and that son of a bitch is going to die, okay? That we are done. And that's where America always winds up. Sooner or later, you have to get... No, I'm not sitting back down until this fly is done. And that's how I see God. They're just a freaking fly. Won't leave me alone. You know? Plus, then they're barfing on everything. They're diseasing you. There's no good. You know? I'm like, go eat somebody else's crap somewhere, you know? So that's how I feel what's going to happen. It's going to be America's going to get up off the couch, and they're not going to sit down until they're done, as long as they understand a clear vision of what needs to be done and what fly needs to be taken out. If you don't know that, then you're just pissed off, you know? And that's where you come in.
That's exactly where both of us come in. This is what I'm saying. This is what the Libertarian Party and the Libertarian Movement need to do. They need to define what our brand is, and that brand is pure liberty. It's not this reform nonsense. And then once people can see what the brand is, if the party and the movement had protected the brand for the last 30 years, then people could know where they need to go, Ernie. If you destroy your brand, then how are people supposed to know? Let's say people get disgusted and say, we're sick and tired of this, we want to move to something else. How do they know what to move to if there's no brand to point to?
Yeah, Bob Barr, Bill Weld, Johnson.
Exactly.
I'm going, really? Are you freaking kidding me?
Yeah. You know, the analogy I often hear, that people say, oh, the Libertarian Party is a political party. Our objective is to get people in office. That is not our objective. Our objective is the free society. And the analogy is much more closer to a religion. If you take, for example, the Catholic Church, you had this child molestation crisis in there. Well, they could have started watering down their core principles to try to keep members from leaving. A lot of people were leaving the Catholic Church or to get new members. They didn't do that. They still protect their core principles in the Catholic religion. That's what needs to be done with the Libertarian movement. It's not a matter of, hey, let's water down our principles so we can expand membership. It's a matter of we need to protect our brand and then let the membership and the vote and the support work themselves out.
Yeah, I'm not looking for the Catholic Church to be a freaking example because, I mean, they're not doing that great anymore. You know,
well, I'm saying that the example I'm using is they're not willing to sacrifice their core principles despite the fact they're losing members. That's admirable. That's what the party is going to do. The last 3 years, our brand is everything. This is our
path. We've got to get this shit, regardless of what's happening in the political arena. Because
then they would have something to point to. And people say, we're discussing, we're ready to move away from the party.
All right, sounds like Jacob Hornberger's going to be the... A little bit. Now, you know, we'll be talking to him more. Jacob Hornberger, Future Freedom Foundation, FF.org.
Yeah, and now,
live
from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember... I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Yeah, unafeared, you're on Declare Your Independence with Declare Independence with, kind of, sort of, with Frank Tambury, doctor, whatever. Frank, you there? Can you hear me? Frank.
I can hear you. That's a heck of an introduction for me.
Okay.
Yeah, thanks.
You know, Dr. Frank declaring something. He's going to the Trump report, we got bids out for new name. You know, if we're going to keep doing this, I don't think it's going to be reported something. You know, a lot of our best conversations, Dr. Frank Tambury and I, have been about, the culture and build up to this. And we just had, 2 hours before you, Charlie Robinson is one of the, with Ricky Versailles, I think, Verandas, the Ripple Effect podcast. They put together the Union of the Unwanted. And it's a lot of these guys that, the freedom-oriented people have been banned off of social media of whatever the hell. And I'm just like, I so don't care. I mean, why? You guys are doing it wrong. You know, quit being on these platforms. What do you think of this one or this one? I go, well, so owns this and does that. And their policy is, and I go, I don't care. Is it hosted on somewhere? Where's it hosted? Who's got the button and switch to turn it off? You know, oh, they got a switch? Well, then I'm not interested because somebody's going to make them do the switch. I mean, when it matters the most. So it's the infrastructure. It's how it's being done. So I don't want to play. And but Charlie came on, and we were talking about the Controlled Demolition of America was a book that he and Berwick wrote, that kind of the foundations of things that had to be taken down. And while they're describing that, I'm thinking a lot of Dr. Frank, because Dr. Frank Tambury has been saying the same. They got to do this. They got to do this. And you could see it in the culture, in the movies, in the pop culture, in the influence of America. You see it happening for years. We're describing this. We just had on Jacob Hornberger from Future Freedom Foundation. And I know him as Bumper. That's why I keep saying that sometimes. But, you know, Bumper's been, we got it, in the Libertarian Party, and we're going to fix it. And then I'm like, I'll help you do whatever. And you think you can get, but I'm telling you, we're up against those that will not allow a resurgence of freedom oriented, certainly a third party with ballot status of all the hell no, and they will spend whatever it takes to stop that from happening and have a clean, uncompromising, voluntarist message. Oh, hell no, that does not serve their interest. So as we're going into this Biden administration, as we're going into, Harris administration, as we're going into whatever the hell they got planned for us, what are we going to talk about? How are we going to cover it? Are we waiting for Trump and Q to come save us again? Is there a secret plan? Is there a line of frog march and handcuff people or something? What are we going to do, Frank? You know, and don't piss me off.
Well, I said that's not going to happen. There's no way we're going to get through an hour. That's like. Oh, by the way, we got a lot of comments from last week's show. I heard a lot of good stuff about it. So apparently, whatever it is we are arguing about went over well, and some interesting concepts so on both sides. So I think that was good. A few things. There's a lot of things to talk about. I mean, just throwing some things out. The Supreme Court already threatening to pack the courts, which, we had one of our judge guests on our show who thought that it would never happen, Judge Buttrick, and they're already talking about it. Not saying that they maybe can't with the Senate, but they're already pushing for it, just like Biden's changed his mind on fracking. And I mean, not changing mind, they're all lies, but it also has been showing the contrast to Donald Trump, that whether you hate him or not or disagree with his policies, even my liberal friends admitted years ago that he at least is following up with what he promised. Like everything he did, everything he said, he tried to do. Whether he accomplished it was the people fighting back, but he went forward. It's amazing how many things that Biden has promised his base, different things. You kind of like an old Bill Clinton with his finger out in the wind, and all of a sudden, he's changing everything within 1 week and really taking off a lot of his base, people finally seeing that we're back to politics as usual. So I think the contrast will be shown there. I wanted to chat a little bit about that. There's also the whole, this might be out of my league to discuss it rather than having Tim on the show, but the whole fun on Wall Street yesterday with Reddit and GameStop and AMC, that was a whole other level of resistance from the people, and a whole other infrastructure of Reddit that now they're going to shut down, and it's going to expose a whole other level of the deep state.
Yeah, you're not allowed to crowdsource resistance against us and make us poor. That's so not allowed. There's got to be a law.
Oh, I know, and it shows the disgusting nature of how much that they know they're sucking every dollar out of this economy as it deflates. It's disgusting to watch, and most people don't even know what's happening. Then, of course, I did talk about last week or last couple of weeks, the Charles Goyette. And then last week, to me, which seems, I think, a pushback, because I'm more of an eye for an eye. I guess I'd probably although I've been raised Roman Catholic and Christian, which is turn the other cheek, I guess I kind of resemble more of the Jewish version of the Bible, which is eye for an eye. That's kind of how I feel a little more about. If someone hits me, I'm just going to hit him back. It's like a counterpuncher, which is what Donald Trump was about. But we talk about how if they're going to be banning you because you have the wrong political ideology, because supposedly political ideology is not a protected class, which we assumed when the First Amendment was made. Well, now you've got a person in the Missouri arms store, if you heard about the gun store in Missouri, who now has refused to sell guns to anyone who happens to be a Biden supporter. So I think it's just funny. And he's doing
I'm not sure he cut off a big audience, but,
No, I know, but it's the principle which I keep telling. I keep wanting for people to fight back in that way. I mean, if we're going to turn around and say that your political views are not protected, well, then I mean, what point do conservatives say? Well, fine, then I'm not going to treat you being a doctor, or you can't ride my taxi, or whatever else it might be. I mean, we really have to go down that path. It seems like the only way to have the person on the left understand what they're doing is you have to do it back to them, and that's what's so frustrating. They can't see what they're doing.
Okay, I got to insert into this. This is, give the impression that you're not going to be able to, as if that split America into these two big giant different groups. And I'm going, I don't see it that way. I see you got like 86.7% of the people out there say, whatever, I don't care, I'm out living my life. And you got the top few percent battling over each other how they're going to try and rule and control everybody else. And I'm just, when they're going, we're not going to shop with you, and we're not, hey, man, I don't even care. I don't know what the hell you're talking about, that kind of thing. I can see it's all optics. It's false flags and BS. It's, this person does against that. That's why they got to pay for all these Antifa running, doing riot of whatever the hell they're doing. And it's just all attention on things that aren't really there. It's a hologram. It's a presentation. It's media and education. Now, it does have an impact, and a lot of times it just causes confusion. And so that's what I want to,
that's fair enough. I just want to just point out that I don't mean this tit for tat as if I'm just that simplistic about it, which I don't think is what you're saying. But what I'm saying is by doing that, it forces the issue. And then, of course, people will sue and say you can't do that. It's discrimination. Yeah. But like what you like to do, if you want to push it to the open so that it. That's my point. It's not that I just really want everyone to say, well, I'm not gonna tell you my cucumbers at my food store because they're buying support. I mean, I'm not that trivial. I don't want us to go that way. What I'm saying is it pushes the issue back, so therefore, it forces it, therefore a case in the court, and then therefore would prove, that.
Oh, Frank's taking us to court! We're going to the court! We'll be right back with Dr. Frank Tamburi in just a little bit.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800, 602-264-2800, and now, Ernest Hancock.
And the Dr. Frank Tamburi report. Where is Trump now anyway? What's he doing? Is he in the bunker of, Save America? Him and QAnon, hatching a plan? What's happening?
All right. Well, first off, you said Trump. Is that what you said?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I'm sorry. Yeah, you cut out. All right. So, well, first off, you for people who might be new to the show, Eric keeps kidding around with the QAnon thing. We're not a QAnon show. We've never gone down that rabbit hole. And Ernie, to his credit, called it first. Although, I agreed. I mean, this has like been a psyop at the whole thing. And who knows? It'll be interesting. You know, whoever QAnon is, it'll be like Deep Throat. You know, from Watergate, it'll be some guy. It may have been one of those pencil pusher little bow tie wearing deep state people that we saw come out of their crevices during Trump's first impeachment hearing. It's like now we have to have number one and number two. It's kind of funny, but that first whole impeachment was all about the deep state basically just finally just having it because Donald Trump wasn't listening to them, and they're like, "How dare you not listen to us? We've been here for 30 years, and my father worked here, and my father owned this place." And anyway, so that was the deal. But anyway, the QAnon I think is probably one of those people because there was enough information that was baiting people that was true because they would say things that the mainstream like people would not know about what Donald Trump's next move might be or a certain policy that came out of the blue. And it was enough to bait people that whoever was writing this was truly part of the inside, which they probably were. This was not just some guy just making it up in his basement, in my belief, but the whole thing was a psyop to just keep throwing everyone off. And just to finish this point, for those of you that maybe haven't thought it from this perspective, you know, if you accuse me of murdering 2-3 people or doing, we'll just keep it bad because, we'll say murdering 3 people, and you guys have, there was proof on it, right? And I'm doing everything to try to hide the proof. You know, of course, I'm a sociopath, so I turn around and I have to blame someone else to point the direction somewhere else to confuse things. Now, when the sheriff is in town and they have access to all of the data and the evidence that's probably there, if they look deep enough to prove the transgressions I did, well, then I turn around. If I know this, I say, you know what? And I take the offensive. This is just what a sociopath would do. And you tell the media, oh my gosh, Ernie Hancock's accusing me of killing not 3, but 10, but 100. He thinks I've killed 100 people. Here's all these people he claimed that which I've killed. And of course, if you have QAnon, which puts this stuff out and says, oh yeah, guess what else this person did? He did this and this and this. And I, supposedly took out, Mary Sue. Well, then all of a sudden, after you make all these claims, then what I do as the sociopath is then I get Mary Sue. I find Mary Sue. Say, hey, Mary Sue, let's talk on CNN. Hey, Mary Sue, I heard that you're supposedly that I offed you and you're sitting here all smiling. So clearly, that was a fake lie. And then I get the Billy Bob. Hey, Billy Bob, I supposedly offed you too. And obviously all this stuff from them are all lies. So therefore, what you do is you do a smoke screen to cover the things you really did by just going big. And that's what sociopaths do. I'm telling you, because I've dealt with them personally. They go so big that the people around them can't believe what they're doing, and they obscure everything. So that, to me, and I think what Ernie was talking about with the psyop, not to put words in your mouth about how they did it, that's my view of what the strategy was. Also, and this is a very important point, we chatted a little bit last time, is I think Americans are going to have to learn a new skill, which is vetting information. Information is going to become a currency, which I think it pretty much already is. And you've talked about that, Ernie, how it becomes down to being reliable and authentic. And because we're so limited in our time and there's so many voices out there and we don't trust the main system. So you have to have at least some sense of, that if you're going to invest your time with someone, the information is worthwhile and you can share it with others since we're now evolving into a network society. And as part of the network, you're only valuable as part of the network if you're the information that you're sending and transferring is reliable. So this is it sounds like the Borg in a way, but we're kind of getting to that point. So I think what's happened with a lot of Americans is as they're waking up in the last 4 years, 8 years with Dr. Paul, maybe a lot of Americans who trusted the system the whole time never questioned it, didn't learn how to question it, didn't go outside of CNN or Fox News or Wall Street Journal, are now suddenly, quickly being thrown into the frontier, into the Netherlands here, and they're trying to figure out where to get information. And I do sympathize with people, including in my own family, my own father. Hi, Pop. you know, and you know, but my father, he's been new to all this. And so it's easy to go down rabbit holes and you don't know how to vet information from people. Whereas people like, I think a lot of us that listen to the show for a long time, you know, Jacob and yourself and myself and Charles Goyette, you know, we've been looking for information outside the system for decades before the internet was even there. So you start to learn talents and skills of what to, how to vet information. Doesn't mean you're always right, but you don't get fooled as easily, and you can kind of, you know, the wheat from the chaff a bit more. But I think most Americans get all thrown into that camp very quickly without a skill set, and the internet and all the confusion and the information war and psyops, and no wonder it's such a mess. And so many people probably went along with the stuff, and it did, you know, it did obscure things and made our side seem crazier than, you know, as crazy as the left is, and I mean really crazy, but. It made this whole thing even more convoluted. So thanks for letting me get all that out. But I think information vetting and how to – I mean, look, all right, one last thing. So one of the things I've said to you and people at the discussion group is I always ask people that I respect, which is what do you listen to? Where do you get your information? And many times I don't think that question is taken as seriously, because I think we all need to start to reevaluate, you know, the information as a currency.
You know, my thing is that I have hot links on my, you know, Freedom's Phoenix is always set up to be its own social kind of network thing anyway, and it can be. It could kick the crap out of Facebook, all that kind of stuff. It's just how much you're willing to put in the track, because we ran into that problem in 2009-10 after the Levolution. It just crashed servers. I mean, it was too popular for what we had as a budget to do. So then it's like, you know, integration to something else. Then we see, no, it needs to be decentralized, and that's what, you know, IPFS thing. But the Freedom's Phoenix has a custom module on there. If you join, you go to the top of the page, it says join us. In there, when you log in, you get this, it's called the custom module, and you can turn it on and off, and it drops down on the right side. And it's like you have your weather, and you got this, and the comment section, and this section, and that section, and blah, blah, blah. But one of the things in your favorites that you can click on the site and save this over, because it goes by so fast, or you have a reference to where all the stuff is. And that became a popular use for other talk show hosts and so on, that they would pull things, and then they would talk about it on air. That was a big feature for them. But the big thing is the hot links. And what I do is, you know, you put all these hot links in, and that's where I go to get all the news. And I'll go and I'll send it to staff, and then I just send them links, and they go put them up, put a graphic up. That's how it's done. Well, that takes me a couple hours to do that every day. I go through, I scan. Well, now I need new websites to go to, new contacts, new information sources, because I don't care anymore. I don't care what, you know, Biden's going to be. I don't care. If we don't know what they, them, those got planned for us, we haven't been paying attention. I'm looking for solutions. Where do I get the solutions? You know, how to purify water. You know, how to build this, whatever. How to be left alone-ism, a decent for private environment. They can suck it. I don't want to change. You can't. I don't care about changing. It's about us as individuals. That's where the power kind of thing.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
What? All right, here we're coming back. And we're back. Damn it. We were doing, you know, Frank and I, you know, our arguments go long. Anyway, so I want to make sure that, you know, what we're doing next is the time and effort that Frank and I put into this stuff. I'm not wasting my freaking time, because what is it normally that's happening? Oh, once more into the breach, we're going to do it harder, better. This guy. My goal has always been the same. How many minds can we free? And what does that mean? You know, free to what? You know, I mean, you know, some critical thinking skills, you know, that you look at accurate information and the facts, you know, tell you what? Oh, there's too many rich people, so tax the rich and shoot them or eat them or something. I am, what? You know what I mean? Why? You know, well, because of, so I'm going to keep asking why. I'm going to say, you know, the whole purpose of government was to leave me aloneism. That was to protect, you know, my, see, that's another thing. Rights. Where, you know, George Carlin did a big thing on rights. You don't have any rights. You got privileges. You know, the only thing, and then I remember, you know, hearing rights are what you defend. You have no right to anything that you can't defend that right. If you don't assert it, defend it, oh, no, I got the right because I said so. and with this here howitzer, and, you know, okay, well, maybe you got a right to that because, yeah, let's go get it from this guy over here. You know, you don't have any rights that you're not defending. If you don't defend it, they take it away. How much right you got now? So this is, it's an opinion, and the opinion of reform, the opinion of a little slavery, the opinion of, you know, the, you know, we're being ruled wrong by the federal, the military, industrial banking, you know, new world we rule you complex of, you know, they're ruling me wrong. Yeah, I'm going, wow, until we get that mindset right, you lost before you started. So I'm Frank. You know, free me, man. What are we going to do for the next year, 2 years, 4 years? What we got? You know, Trump coming back. Trump, trusting Trump. I'm still waiting.
Trump, exactly.
Oh!
TIT, trusting Trump. Oh! All right, so. Well, look, I waited until at least half an hour before I decided to really piss you off here. Because here we go. We'll talk about voting. Okay. So, I at least gave you half an hour before your blood pressure.
Oh, shoot.
Well, look. First off, Jacob Hornberger was on last hour. Just saying, on the live show. I didn't realize. I did hear some actually a part of that show. I by the way, I don't take anything back I said last week. I know Ernie had thrown one of Jacob's articles at me, and I kind of went off on it. And it would be, you know, if everyone wants to discuss, that's fine. I don't like talking about people that they can't defend themselves. But I'm sure. But it was about an article which he wrote. From last time. But Jacob, I heard on the interview today, and there's some things I want to talk about with the Libertarian Party. I hate to bring it up because a lot of people tune in to hear about the Trump report. And the minute I bring up Libertarian Party with you, it goes into 2 hours of the cocopus, blah, 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 and the whole show gets derailed. So I have to be careful whenever I bring that up. However, I think it might be important a little bit here because, you know, we are kind of at a crossroads for many people listening. Maybe not the typical listener, but people who tune into the Trump report who identify more as libertarian conservatives or Trumpers, whatever. And I want to bring up something I think that both you guys miss regarding the Libertarian Party. But, you know, as an outsider, you might say. But I have to say it was interesting. Jacob, to his credit, defended Donald Trump. He talked about how at least Trump was someone who fought back and he pushed back and he tried to challenge the system. And then Ernest Hancock wound up doing a representative Eric Swalwell, and I think farted on air from his that the whole world could hear when Jacob said that. I just want to say that was a little comical. Your expression hearing Jacob defend Donald Trump pushing back on the establishment, which he did, and I give credit to Jacob for pointing
push
that out.
Push back for
especially
what?
Someone who,
yeah, I'm going like he pushed.
Oh God!
He pushed
listen,
back.
Even
he,
Jacob
he didn't do
agrees
it their
with
way.
Me. I can't.
He wanted to rule me differently.
No, no, no. Oh, jeez. So you've got Jacob, who at least, I mean, to his credit, I mean, he's someone who's fought the system in many ways, as many of us as libertarians, but he did it for his version, for his. The truth thing he's trying to put a lot of effort in was the JFK assassination. And, you know, when you put that much time into that, or Ernest Hancock on voting integrity, which is an oxymoron for him, and all of these things, when you spend so much time into this, you see how the sausage is definitely made. And I think Jacob, to his credit, understands from someone who's seen how long, 50 years now, whatever, 60 years with JFK assassination. No, how long is it? 60-something years now? Since JFK was assassinated, and yet still we don't have the answers. And granted, you want to blame Trump. I'll be honest, I don't know enough to comment about what the real issue was in not releasing everything. Obviously, the president could have, and he did it for certain reasons. Was it because there was something that really was an issue, or was it because he was being pressured from the deep state, the same reason that he was not able to pardon Julius Assange? I mean, I don't know. There's obviously questions out there, things that I am frustrated or angry at Donald Trump for not doing, but there is enough trust and goodwill. I know you're going to hate this. Enough trust and goodwill that President Trump has gained with me, and I'm sure many people out there, that I'm willing to at least give him the benefit of the doubt. Whereas any
for five
other politician,
years.
It's just all BS. I know Donald Trump has fought for us in every way possible, and it's a tricky game. You can't make everyone happy with everything, and he's up against.
No. He's still going to do it. He waited.
I'm not trying.
He waited till he's not president anymore that he can do it. He, wait. When I'm not president anymore, Then I'll do it. Then I'll do it. I'll do it. I'll do it. Just wait.
I'm not saying he's good. Of course. No. But the thing is, everything. Look, think of it this way. Everything I said in the beginning of the show. Everything Donald Trump said he was going to do, he either did or he attempted doing until the point it just had slobbered. You know, it just clobbered him down. Right. Whereas you got people like Biden or Bush or the rest of them or John McCain. Build the dang fence. Oh, what's wrong? Why can't we do it? And then the minute he gets in, it's the offer amnesty the very next day. That is what we're used to. And why people can't remember those days and at least give credit. I mean, when I got liberal friends admitting that at least Donald Trump, they don't agree with his policies, but he did what he said he was going to do. And that's what's...
You know, this is how you do it. This is how you do it. I'm going to show everybody how you do it. This is how you do it. It's inauguration. You know, you get up there and you go like this. You go, is this thing on? You're on? You're free. I'm going golfing. Boom, done. Give me the paper.
Yeah.
Veto. Yes, you damn skippy
hey, Ernie,
it is.
Have you been listening?
It's exactly
have you been listening
that
to your
simple.
Own Trump report? No, have you been listening to your own Trump report for the last 4 years, 5 years I've been doing this? Have you realized it's not that simple, Ernie? You just saw someone, even Jacob agrees, someone who tried to push back and the entire ocean collapsed. I mean, the whole state, everything, the money, the power, the military industrial complex, everyone collapses on you, and I
okay,
can't.
This is where we got into a big argument
think,
a couple weeks
Dr.
ago.
Paul,
we got
how
to
would Dr. Paul pull the troops back? How could Dr. Paul just snap
say
his
it.
Fingers, pull the troops back when you just saw
say
what
it.
Happened?
Say it. You want JFK? Oh, boom, there, do it. Well, they're not going to do it. I don't give a crap. Just say it. Say, I made the order. I did. I filled out the paper. They didn't do it. What are you going to do about it? I don't know. You know, yeah, go do something. Sessions, go. You're not going to do that. Oh, we'll get Barr. You go. You're not going to do that. Hey, I signed the paper.
They
I did it. I did my part.
Yeah,
I did my part.
You know what happened?
Oh, it's
they
broken.
The
oh, okay.
Then we throw the 20. What is it? I forget. 24th, 25th Amendment. What is the one? All of a sudden, you know, Dr. Ron Paul is incapable, old man, and he's crazy, and he wants our whole country to die, and he's pulling all the troops out, and we're going to violate treaties, and we're going to go to war.
Make him say it!
And he's dangerous. Of course, let them say it. But the same tricks here. But Dr. Paul wouldn't fight back the way that Donald Trump would, and that's why he would have been collapsed further
by
the whole media staff.
At least he was on the right wall. I mean, you know, it's like they're going to, you know, storm the castle. You know, they get those big ladders and they have the big armies and they get up on the wall and they're throwing, they're shooting and they're killing them and they get to the top and there's nothing on the other, there was the wrong wall. I'm going, you know, what the hell, does it make any difference if you're on the wrong wall, you know? So
at least Ron Paul
would be like, oh yeah, we're going into the, you know, and all of a sudden there's a Federal Reserve and a couple of, you know, top hat guys going, we're so afraid. I'm not playing anymore.
I love Dr. Paul.
Good.
I love Dr. Paul.
Matt Gordon to the break. He's got to leave it on. He loves Dr. Paul. We'll be back. Dr. Frank Denbury, and I'll let him talk after he's all built up and I got the steam pressure on the valve. We'll release the Dr. Frank Denbury valve in 4 minutes.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
And Dr. Frank Denbury, he's all built up and pressurized, and he's gonna tell me what we got to do, trusting somebody. All right. Do it. Heal me, man.
Yeah, well, I just on a quick aside, it has nothing to do with politics. I just want to share with the audience. My daughter, 3.5 years old, last night had her first ever Krispy Kreme donut. And
now you're screwed. You're done. That's like Hammy getting a Dorito.
My office is right next to a Krispy Kreme office, which is hard. I brought one home, and she took her first bite, and she just didn't care. First, she was like, why am I going to eat this? And she bit down, and I'm telling you, she bit down. Her eyes rolled the back of her head. She stopped for a moment, and she went, ooh, like this. And it's one of those moments that if I filmed it and put it on YouTube, I'd have 20 million views. It was just one of those moments we'll never forget.
Yeah, cute little kid. You have a Krispy Kreme endorsement. You know, contract, man.
I know. It was amazing on the show. And, of course, then she woke up at 2 a.m. with a tummy ache, and we're up all night. So that we paid for it anyway. All right, anyway, I just want to get back to that. So
did you make sure she associated the tummy ache with the Krispy Kreme? Does she understand that? You got to get that. I tell you, you know, it's like, ooh, there's a McDonald's. I like me a fresh, man, freaking put it, make it fresh, and they're, you know, pretend meat McDonald's quarter pounder with extra onions. And only if it's fresh, right off of the thing in a good bun. You know, sometimes that's, you know, sometimes a quarter pounder with cheese, that's right. But I always pay for it. 20 minutes later, you just feel like crap. And I have to, you know, consciously stop myself and go, no, you know what's going to happen, so don't do that. So you got to have Phaedra go, look, man, you just feel this tummy ache? That tasted really good. Well, this is the payment for it, okay? Just FYI.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's definitely fun seeing her with all of her firsts. And I bring this up also because, you know, it is for a lot of us. You know, we have to remember we still have a life, and it's so challenging when you're seeing the world changes and we're fighting and all this. And then to come home and read bedtime stories, that kind of thing. It's kind of certainly a whiplash. But also, you sit back and you start thinking, you know, what kind of future will she have? What is the future here? And where is this going? Especially when I think it's not just about the freedom versus the fascism, which is what we're fighting, but you have a whole other force of the young people who I think are really being designed, whether it's intentional or not, that they really are going to be inheriting a whole new world. I've said on your show in the past that we're going through a revolution that's as big as the invention of fire and the agricultural revolution. And we're seeing this now. It's been about 100 years. I mean, ever since, you know, with radio and with telecommunications and such. But the internet is now getting to the last point where everyone is being connected. And not to go down this path, I do want to get back to the voting part about where Trump goes now. I do want to address that. But there you go. Eric Swalwell again is back. But the thing is what you have is
– Eric Swalwell. Who's Eric Swalwell? Or you keep saying that. Who's that?
Look him up. Representative Eric Swalwell. He's the guy who's hanging out with the Chinese spies.
Yeah, isn't he in charge of something? Is he going to do impeachment or something?
Yeah, the guy, he's a bonehead. He also got wiped out in the primaries along with Kamala Harris, although, you know, she's vice president to be president, and that's another story. But he, anyway, this is really low-grade humor, but he actually passed some wind on an interview on CNN one time. And it went viral.
Nah, every time.
Anyway. I know we've gone low on the show, but anyway. But the thing is we're going through this true change in humanity in a way where information was always coming from the top down, and it would get more and more diluted as time went on. But now we're having the inflection point where information is finally going from the bottom up, and that's where this turmoil is. This is beyond just about freedom versus something else. This is humanity going through a shift about who we are and how we communicate at the deepest fundamental level. And it's my daughter, who just had her first Krispy Kreme, who is going to have to figure this out because she won't be as tarnished. I hate to use the word tarnished, really, but she won't be set in her ways as all of us are. We really are set in a way that it's hard for us to think differently. I talked about information being a currency earlier, where you've got people looking for the official source. What's the official word? And I think in time, people are going to realize there is no official word. It becomes something more fluid, where information and where our places in society becomes more fluid. Now, as a libertarian and an independent individual, I abhor that. I don't want that. I cannot live in that world. But I do think ultimately that's the future. The question is, can you live in a network society that is fluid, where you're just one cog of an information kind of a milieu, and still keep your independence and your own humanity and who you are as an individual? That is the challenge for the future, and I don't have an answer for it, but I am privileged in a way to at least watch it happen, as scary and infuriating as it is. With that said, let me, with the time I have, just quickly say that there's a question amongst conservative libertarians or moderates or whatever you want to call it, Trump people, which is, where do we go? What does Trump do? Trump is already, he's coming back. He's already given overtures that he's coming back, and whether it's Trump TV and some other things. But here's the question. Does he create a third party, or does he stay with the Republicans and then primary? I gave you my opinion, which a few weeks ago I predicted he would do both. That's the strategy that I predicted, which is that you stay a Republican and primary the people who you can, But in areas where the infrastructure of their Republican Party is too strong, Arizona being one of them, for exactly the reasons Ernie pointed out earlier in the show, that's when you fall back on a third party to wipe them out from the other direction. So it's like a pincer move. And it depends on the state and depends on the district of what you're going after. And it turns out that's exactly what Donald Trump seems to be doing, that he'll create a third party as leverage to push back in areas that are too hard to come back. But in other areas, you can easily primary. Which that's to the last point, and thanks, Ernie, for letting me get this out, is many people on the Dr. Steve Turley show and others on the private show, I'm a subscriber, they were talking, well, how many of us just want to rip up our Republican membership cards? I'm sure that and Ernie has one too. So how many of us would like to just rip it up? I would. However, for all of you listening, the strategy for right now is hold on to your card, because much as we hate it, but at least you can still vote in the primaries. So we have to figure out how much sway will happen, how many people can be properly primaried. And for that reason, you have to remain a Republican. But at the same time, you have one foot firmly out the door, which is for the third party, Patriot Party, whatever might happen, which is the leverage to push back. All right. So there we go. Ernie, I'm sure you hate everything I just said.
Everything. When we had Roger Stone on, and I had on a couple of times, and then I go, you got to come on with me and Frank, man, do Trump Report. You know, we just got to do it. And my thing, I made, go back, listen to those shows. I'm going, look, I don't give a crap what you guys say. And he got kind of pissed off because I didn't give a crap. But I go, look, it has to come down to expression by the people. And that's in the form of voting or what, it's got to be accurate. And if you guys aren't, you know, taking this seriously, you already lost. And I made that clear. Crystal freaking clear. If he didn't tell Trump, fine, you know, whatever. It's not, my conscience is clear, because I'm just like, look, if you think you're going to be voting yourself free, you have not been paying attention. That is a side effect. Everything is a side effect of the people being informed, supporting a philosophy of leave me aloneism, and what the whole point of any government is. The only justification for them being anybody that says they're going to represent you, you know, is to defend your right to be left alone. You know, defend against somebody that would take my life, liberty, property. Defend against someone that would, you know, lock me down, close my business, you know, curfew me inside my house. I'm like, and you're the good guys? I don't see ISIS doing that. You know, I don't see the galloping hordes of the whoever the fill-in-the-blank people doing it. You know, you're doing it. You're doing it. You got the shiny badge and the fine hat and the gun. You know, you're doing it. And I'm going, if I'm not up against that, if I want to, you know, be ruled better, you know, you're missing the whole freaking point. So I'm no. You know, I got to fight them? I don't have to fight them. I just need to outlast them. They're going to fall on their own. So if there's going to be some political process, the only reason that I am so involved and known in the political process is because I use it to inform people, to educate them while they're paying attention that they're lying. And they'll go through an entire 4 years of bullshit, and what happens? Everybody goes, we're going to do it better next time.
Why is Jacob Bornberger bothering trying to run for president?
Got me.
You gotta confuse everybody.
You know, this is exactly why I have this conversation with him. Well, look, man, if you're not going hardcore, which he was, you know, I've been fine if he got up there, we'd have something to play with. But what did he do? You know, he was like, oh, well, they're just misguided. No, they're not. They're funded. We are the target. This is not going to go easy. More with Dr. Frank Tenbury, because he can't hear us over the music anyway. We'll be back in just a few. Go to the archive. You know, I'll have it up here in, I don't know, 5 hours from now.